The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, yes. A few quick things that we wanted to start by catching up on this morning before getting into some more meaty stories.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, another report of IDF attacks against targets in Syria. This is according to the Syrian state news agency, who have said that the IDF fired two missiles from the Golan Heights towards an empty building south of Damascus, which sounds like what's the point of trying to attack an empty building anyway. Apparently, according to this report, one of the missiles was shot down. There were no losses caused. And it is not clear whether these missiles were fired from an aircraft or were surface-to-surface missiles. So this is just part of the ongoing, almost weekly now, attacks that we hear about in Syria. I doubt very much that the building was empty if the IDF had chosen to target it, if indeed the IDF had chosen to target it. Nothing said by Israeli media or by the IDF, as we would expect. Although in recent times, as we've already discussed, it's become more common for the IDF and for the Israeli government actually to make comments about these events, which was not the case in the past. There is more legitimacy being given to the fact that Israel is involved. One can almost take it for granted that if a building was targeted in the south of Damascus, there would have been a reason for it, and it's not because it's empty. So we, I suppose, will not hear too much more about this. But again, just part of the ongoing tension across the Syrian border. For those people looking to come to Israel, we already discussed some of the bureaucracy involved for tourists coming to Israel. A little glimmer of hope for those people traveling to Israel, whether they are Israelis returning or whether they are tourists coming to Israel. The government is set to introduce next week a slightly different testing regime before you actually come to Israel. So at the moment, it is required that all travelers will have a PCR test done before they leave the country of embarkation. It needs to be done at least within the 72-hour period before departure from that country. Now the option will be given to allow you to do an antigen test 24 hours before departure instead of a PCR test within the 72 hours ahead of departure. So you can just do an antigen test. It needs to be done by some recognized agency. It's not good enough for you to buy one of these home kits and do the test at home and photograph your result and bring it along. That won't be accepted. It needs to have some sort of an official result associated with it. So you need to get your antigen test done by some recognized agency within your departure country. But it just shows that there's a slight glimmer of hope in terms of trying to relax some of these restrictions. It doesn't mean that you won't be tested when you arrive in Israel. That PCR test will still be done. Everybody is required to have a PCR test when you arrive in Israel, and that is unlikely to change, at least in the near future. So that's just a little update about that. And then we just wanted a little update as well about the Israeli couple who are detained in Turkey.
Yes, please.
So apparently the lawyer representing the couple has now visited Natalie Oknin. She is, of course, her and her husband, Mordi, are detained separately in Turkey on charges of being spies for Israel. A little bit more information about the couple has been released. They are apparently both drivers for Eged, and which, of course, is Israel's national bus company. And Natalie herself has actually been in commercials advertising Eged to the general public and also advertising for drivers to join Eged. And her comment to her lawyer was, do they really think that an Eged driver would be a spy, or potentially the other way around, whether an Israeli spy would be an Eged driver? Be that as it may, the diplomatic temperature is certainly rising on this particular issue. The Turkish Interior Minister called the Israeli couple spies in a public forum. And of course, that didn't go down well in Jerusalem with the Israeli government. So there is no sign yet that Natalie and Mordi Orkanian will be released anytime soon. And this particular story seems set to roll for another little while. As I said before, I'm not really quite sure what to make out. Certainly the Israeli press are trying to present this as being just an innocent case of tourists in Turkey taking pictures and being randomly arrested for something that any tourist would seemingly wish to do while touring in Istanbul without any real basis for this arrest. I'm not sure yet what to make of the story.
It's definitely a strange story. Just one question that I asked a listener as we were talking about Miss Holocaust Survivor, an 86-year-old woman winning the title. I asked the listeners their thoughts. Gail says, I think it's lovely, Howard. I'm not uncomfortable about it at all. Linda says, I think it's very heartwarming to give those grannies recognition. I'm sure her children, grandchildren think she is the best. It just made me a little uncomfortable. I don't know. Maybe it says much more about me than it does about anything else. What's your thoughts on that, Anthony?
Yeah, I mean, I was also not quite sure what to make of this story. I think it's nice that Holocaust survivors are being given recognition and being displayed in a very positive light, you know, for their beauty, for their smartness, for, you know, all the experience and the history and the knowledge that they have. And of course, to give them a little bit of a treat, of course, there were 10 contestants in this particular catwalk show. They were made up and styled and they were dressed up with their sashes. And, you know, it was a little bit of a glamour show for these ladies, ranging in age from 79 to 90. So, I think something quite nice for them on the day. I think we inherently have this kind of uncomfortable feeling about pageants in general. I did read the piece that you wrote, Howard, on the pageant that you attended and how you feel about it in light of some of the recent events. I think we've kind of come into a society which feels a little bit uncomfortable about this, but I don't think that there's any harm in spoiling these ladies and dressing them up and putting them on show for the general public to see how well they're doing. And it kind of comes as a very nice counter to the other story of a Holocaust survivor who apparently received a letter. Two people who are 95 years old, were classmates in Germany in the 30s, received a letter from his fellow classmate now after 80 years or more, and just with all kinds of Nazi words and phrases and all kinds of anti-Semitic kind of references in this letter. A man who was the only Jewish kid in his school, now lives in Hebron, was a member of Knesset, and his response to this Nazi-filled, I mean, I don't know if it was really a hate letter, because there didn't seem to be much hate, but just lots of Nazi references, Heil and, you know, things like that. And he just said, you know, the irony of this letter, he says, is that it's addressed to me in the sovereign Jewish state of Israel. That, for him, said it all. So just another related kind of Holocaust survivor story.
All right, let's take a look at some of the stories that we wanted to talk about this morning as well. Iran has resumed production of the equipment required for uranium enrichment, and it was at facilities reportedly destroyed by the Mossad. Tell us about it.
So this is a story that actually comes from the Wall Street Journal, which reported yesterday that Iran has resumed production of this equipment for advanced centrifuges at the Karaj nuclear site. Now, there were reports that Mossad was accused of blowing the site up in June. So not a great deal of time has passed since that particular incident, which apparently involved a drone at the site, which fired some sort of a missile at the site and in so doing destroyed some of the production facilities at the site. That's at least according to some of the stories that I've read. And now the Wall Street Journal is saying that Iran has resumed production of these advanced centrifuges. And around this story, of course, comes everything else that is involved with the Iranian nuclear program, including the fact that the International Atomic Energy Agency has admitted that it has no idea what exactly is going on at that Karaj nuclear site since June, since that attack took place, because Iran has refused to grant nuclear inspectors access to the site on the premise that it has been destroyed, that there's been some sort of an incident to the site. So the International Atomic Energy Agency says they don't know what's going on. The international community in general is saying that there is a lot of clandestine activity going on. It is not clear what is being moved from one site to another, what enrichment is going on. So even though there's a lot of being written about what Iran may or may not be doing, I think the main admission across the globe is that there's a lot of clandestine activity going on, which we've just really no idea exactly what's going down. And, you know, this could really point to the fact that Iran is pursuing its original plan of building not one, but potentially five nuclear weapons. This was apparently according to the plans that were stolen by Israel a few years ago. The plans were developed between 1999 and 2003. So this is already not a new plan. But apparently Iran had the intention of building five nuclear weapons. And apparently this development at Karaj is something really, really important. And potentially that parts could be used in Fordow as well, which is that nuclear facility, which is deep underground and very, very heavily fortified. So the more these advanced centrifuges are being produced and made available, the higher the enrichment level of uranium Iran can achieve. And of course, along with that higher enrichment level, the greater risk that nuclear weapons will be produced. And so that's really where all of this is going. And, you know, in the background, of course, we have the U.S. trying to revive the 2015 nuclear deal along with those P5+1 countries. They seem quite determined to do so. We discussed the fact that the special representative from Iran has been in Israel to talk to Israeli officials about this. But the U.S. seems very, very intent upon returning to this, even though there is widespread recognition that Iran is really not disclosing anything about what it's up to.
Yeah, and we've never really been able to rely on much of what they say in any event, so I'm not really sure that now's a good time to start doing that. The new head of Shin Bet met with the Palestinian Authority president last week in Ramallah. That's an interesting meeting.
Well, it is an interesting meeting because at the moment, officially, the Israeli government view is that the prime minister, at least, will not be willing to meet with Mahmoud Abbas, the Palestinian Authority president. We know that former prime minister Netanyahu did meet with Mahmoud Abbas on more than one occasion, both publicly and apparently also in private, secretly things that were later disclosed to the general public. But on this occasion, it's Ronen Bar, who's been recently appointed as the head of the Shin Bet also known as the Shabak, Shin Bet, which are, of course, two Israeli letters. And if you add them together with another letter, it has the acronym Shabak, which means Shin Sherut Bitachon Klali, the General Security Agency. This is the agency that's responsible for internal security rather than the Mossad, which takes care of external security, things outside of Israel. And the Shin Bet has the responsibility as well for keeping security in the Palestinian Authority area, where Israel has the overall security responsibility, as well as on the borders, and of course along with Gaza as well. So Ronen Bar, quite early in his tenure as head of the Shin Bet, decided to go to Ramallah to meet with Mahmoud Abbas. Apparently they spoke about security measures, they spoke about the economic issues, some of which we discussed yesterday, some measures to potentially strengthen the Palestinian economy, and they discussed joint economic and security cooperation between the two. Now, security cooperation between the Palestinian Authority and the Israeli security agencies is not uncommon, has not been uncommon, has been very, very fruitful and helpful in preventing terror activities from taking place, to the extent that the Palestinian Authority and the security agencies were willing to cooperate and divulge information, and there have been periods of time when that has been a lot better than others. But of course, it's interesting that this meeting between Ronen Bar and Mahmoud Abbas comes on the back of an earlier meeting that took place with Benny Gantz and Mahmoud Abbas. So Benny Gantz was the most senior Israeli minister to meet with the Palestinian Authority president, I think, since 2010, which is the last time I think that the prime minister actually met with him. And since then, we've also had other slightly more junior ministers of the Israeli government also go to Ramallah to meet with the Palestinian Authority president. So there have been meetings backwards and forwards. The one meeting which seems like it won't happen, aside from the meeting with the prime minister, is apparently a meeting with the Interior Minister, Ayelet Shaked. Apparently, Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas said he would like to meet with Ayelet Shaked. She, in turn, tweeted saying she would not meet with a Holocaust denier who is suing Israeli soldiers at The Hague and paying murderers of Jews. That was Ayelet Shaked's response to the invitation to meet with Mahmoud Abbas. But I think the fact that the head of the Shin Bet went to Ramallah and met with Mahmoud Abbas, I think, is a good sign that at least some level of security cooperation will exist, and a good sign for the Israeli public that we can at least rely on certain security in our everyday existence. The fact that there is cooperation, at least at the security level, between the two organizations, I think, is quite an important thing to know about and to try to maintain as much as possible.
Absolutely. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, we'll catch you tomorrow morning at 7:45. I'm Howard Feldman, and I'd love to hear from you on 34519 or 061-895-1019. Good morning.